everybody. This is Harriet Westmore with the More Wine and Music podcast, the podcast where I discuss music genre over a glass of wine. Tonight's going to be a special episode, so let me get started. My company. All right. Hope everybody is doing well this Saturday evening. I wanted to come on in spite of what's going on in my personal life. I just wanted to first give a shout out to happy birthday to Charlene, Teresa Searcy, Shelton. I had an opportunity. She's an old classmates. We went to school together. It's my first time actually seeing her in many, many years. So I wanted to give her a shout out. I don't know if she's listening, but happy birthday. I enjoyed myself and, you know, we're going to do it again soon. Also, this episode is dedicated to my sister, Phyllis. She has transitioned as of today. So I want to dedicate this show to her. So Phyllis, this is for you. I love you. I'm going to go into episode number 11. This is Miles Davis. Everybody who knows Miles Davis knows who he was. He was a great influential trumpet player in the jazz genre. So I wanted to talk about him for episode 11. Miles Dewey Davis III. That was his actual name. Miles Dewey Davis III was born on May 26, 1926 in Alton, Illinois. So this one, he was born in the north rather than, you know, most of them came from the south, but this time we're talking about a born northerner. So that's where he's from, Alton, Illinois. His father, Miles Davis Jr., was actually a successful dentist, dental surgeon, and his mother was an accomplished music teacher. So her name was Cleota Alton Henry. Henry was her maiden name, was Cleota Henry. And, you know, actually, Miles came from a middle-class family. His family was middle-class. They didn't come from dirt poor like, you know, a lot of the other artists that we have talked about. So he was, he actually came from a, you know, he's one of the few that was, you know, he came from a pretty middle-class, had a pretty good childhood in that respect, as far as not being struggling for anything. In 1928, when he became 2 years old, his family moved to East St. Louis. Anybody who knows about St. Louis, there's St. Louis and then you cross over and then there's East St. Louis. At that particular time, East St. Louis was predominantly white. So they actually moved into, they're one of the few black families that moved into a white area. And that's where his father had his practice as a dental surgeon. Miles also had two other siblings. He had an older sister and a younger brother. So Miles was in the middle. He was a middle child. By the age of 13, his father gave him a trumpet, and that's how he made a start as far as become a trumpet player. And he played in the high school band. And then that is where he met his mentor at the time, who was named Clark Terry. And Clark Terry was at that point known, very well known in the St. Louis area. By the age of early 20s, Miles got married and had two children from that early marriage. And in 1944, he moved to New York City and played with Billy Eckstine. Billy Eckstine was another famous band leader of jazz. He played with him briefly while he attended Juilliard School of Music. So he was really a go-getter. He was, by day, he studied music, and by night, he played at the local jazz places in the area, some of the jazz spots. And this is where he gained a reputation of learning how to play the beatbox. That's when usually in the 40s, it became more into the bebop sound of jazz than the earlier stuff. And this is where he connected with Charlie Bird Parker. You know, remember I talked about him 2 weeks ago. So Bird and Miles, they connected at that point, along with this is where he met Dizzy Gillespie, Fats Navarro, and Match Roach. And in that particular time, from 47 to 1948, he was a part of that quintet. So it was those individuals who created a quintet. And out of that quintet, they recorded the song called Birth of the Cool. And this was supposedly the start of the West Coast Jazz School from that actual song, Birth of the Cool. And incidentally, in this quintet, it was Bird Parker who was the leader of that group. So during that time, when they played together, Bird was the actual band leader. From this group also, Miles was able to hone his craft, and he set himself apart in his trumpet player, because as you recall, Bird Parker was actually, he was the saxophonist, and Miles was trumpet player. And so he eventually gained his craft, gained his momentum, and gained his popularity and his style. And, you know, that kind of set him apart from everybody else. So by the 1950s, Miles unfortunately got into that drug scene like Bird did, like Coltrane did, and he became addicted to heroin. And he was, you know, full-blown addict by that time, by the 50s, early to mid-50s. And it became so bad that his, for 3 years, he was kind of out of the scene because he was, you know, into that drug life. But by 1954, he was able to kick that habit and, you know, build himself back up to regain his stamina, gained his stance in the jazz scene. So, you know, he's had to start off small because, I mean, he dropped from grace. He pretty much dropped out because of his drug use. So he had to, you know, build himself back up, and he did that by playing with, you know, smaller groups. And he was able to build himself back up. And by that point, he was feeling enough confident to form his own group. And that's what he did in 1955. And that is when John Coltrane, who I talked about last week, Coltrane joined Miles Davis's group in 1955. And with John Coltrane, he had the pianist Red Garland, bass player Paul Chambers, and drummer player Philly Joe Jones. Coltrane incidentally left the group in the 60s to create his, he wanted to do his own thing. So, and also if you recall, Coltrane is also battling with heroin addiction. But by the 60s, Coltrane wanted to go venture out on his own, so he did leave the group. And but during the time when Coltrane was in the group and played, that was at the height of the group's success. If Miles' success was during that core group that I just mentioned, that he was at, they were probably one of the well-known dominant group, jazz group of the scene of that day. They were it. They were the group. So until Coltrane left. And after Coltrane left, you know, it wasn't the same. Miles did try to, you know, there were other replacements, but it wasn't the same as that first core group. So, you know, obviously, you know, when you got a good band member or a player like Coltrane or even Bert Parker, you know, it's kind of hard to duplicate that. Even if, you know, if you want to try to move on, it's really hard to duplicate that. But, you know, he tried. And not to say that he wasn't successful, but it wasn't as successful as he was during when they all were together, their actual first original group. So by 1970, Miles recorded the hit album, which was actually was certified as gold, and that was called Bitches Brew. If anybody's familiar with that core album, that was a good album, jazz album, called Bitches Brew. So anybody who knows about Miles Davis on a personal note, his personality, I would say he was a complex person. He was a difficult person to know, because he had so many layers of him. He was a hard person to deal with. He was not what you call a open, friendly person. Matter of fact, I mean, he wasn't friendly at all to whoever he played with. He didn't have a stage presence at all. I mean, he was always complaining, audience always complained that he was not engaging to the audience, because he was always, when he played, he always had his back to the audience. So he never really engaged the audience. He was considered, you know, aloof, standoffish. Actually, he was very, he also was the type of person who spoke his mind. There was no sugarcoating to what, you know, he had to say. And he was kind of a, you know, gruff person. If you see pictures of him, you rarely see a picture of him smiling. I was looking through some of the photos, and it wasn't that he wasn't really a friendly person. But on the other hand, a lot of that could be because of what he experienced. He was particularly very considered hostile to whites because of what he had to go through during the during his early career, you know, starting out. There was one incident where, you know, he got beaten up by the cops outside of a jazz club where he was playing. There was nothing. I guess they just stopped him, harassed him. I don't know. They didn't think a black man should be around that particular jazz club or something, but they were harassing him. And matter of fact, I think he just got finished playing, playing in that particular club, and I think he was just outside, you know, smoking or whatever, and you know, the cops came up to him, and you know, he started harassing him, and then, you know, and Miles is probably the one, you know, spoke up and probably talked back to them and whatever, and so, you know, the cops they pretty much beat him. And so he still carried that hostility. And but at the same time, even though he was like that, he also was somewhat generous. He did replace a lot of his players that in his band were white musicians, and he would help out struggling musicians. He was very generous of like that, even though, you know, he of his hard personality, he would help you out if you need it, and if he thought you were worthy of it, he would help you out. And it didn't matter who you were, if you were white or black, you know, struggling musician or whatever, which is probably why he gave, you know, Bird an opportunity. Because if you recall when I was talking about his story, that, you know, Miles had to, when he was playing under Miles, Miles had to put him out because he, you know, at that point he was, you know, wasn't able to perform because of his drug use. But at the same time, Miles thought so much of Bird because of his playing and his talent, and he knew how, you know, because he's been there too. So he tried to, you know, do what he can to help him. And he did eventually, you know, would hire him back. So, I mean, it's not like he was, you know, just straight stone. I mean, he did. I mean, like I said, he was considered to be a man of mystery, a man who was very complex. He was just a hard person to get to know. But if he liked you, you might not. I mean, you might think he doesn't, but if he thinks enough of you, he will do. You know, he was very generous in that way. Miles was married a total of 3 times. His first wife was named Frances Taylor. His second wife was Betty Mabry. And everybody knows his third and final wife was Cicely, the famous actress, Cicely Tyson. And all three, you know, he divorced. But it seemed like, I didn't know that actually he and Cicely were actually divorced, but Cicely obviously still supported him in different way. Even though they were divorced, she was there for him. He has 4 children, 3 sons and 1 daughter. He has had at the time 7 grandchildren. So, but in 1991, he died on September 28th due to pneumonia, respiratory failure, and he had a stroke along with that. So that's what took him out. So that's Miles Davis. One thing about Miles Davis, you know, we all know him. We all know his playing. And he was one of the few artists who was able to stay relevant with the times, because he was, you know, was around for, 50 something years. His career started in the 40s, early 40s, but by the 60s into the 70s, and then in the 80s, he was still able to play. Even on stage, he was able to acclimate his playing with, you know, the music that was relevant at that time. So he played with the other, you know, musicians and was able, you know, and still, you know, was able to play. Only thing that changed was his way he was dressed. He let his hair grow long. He wore those dark glasses. Like I said, that's the mystique. That's the mysterious of him. He doesn't, you know, he don't let nobody get close to him. But, you know, he was, you know, he contributed a lot in different music genre. It wasn't even the jazz. I mean, he contributed a lot in hip hop. He contributed a lot in the R&B music. So he was able to still stay relevant until, you know, he passed away. So that's it. That is the infamous man with the horn, Miles Davis. So next week is the final season. And I think next week I'll be kind of recapping and talk about all the artists that I've talked to about throughout this season two. So it's kind of a recap. And so I hope everyone would tune in for that. Jazz is a complex genre. It's one of those genres, either you like it or you don't, because it's nothing, you know, you have to kind of understand it and kind of, understand its creativity. It's like being an artist. You have to understand an artist's creativity when they paint. You know, it may not make sense to some people, but just listening to the sound and the song that they play and how they play it, you know, either you like it or you don't. So that's one of the things we'll talk about next week. And like I said, as I wrap up season two. So if you haven't already on Facebook, please share, subscribe and share. Go to www.morewineandmusic.com. I'm going to, because of the end of the season, I will be creating a t-shirt that represents season two for the jazz genre. Each season, I try to create a t-shirt for that particular genre that I'm talking about. So here you have it. All right, you guys, take care of yourself. And I just want to say this. Life is very, very short. You're living in the times to where you don't know, you know, if you're going to be here or not. So keep your family close. Love your family. Reach out to those that your loved ones or friends that you haven't heard from in years. Because time is there's no tomorrow. Tomorrow is not promised. It's not. You know, you may think you have time, you know, and putting it off means that you've missed out. So let's look at our lives moving forward, as live it as this, as if it's your last, because it could be. All right, you enjoy the rest of your night and in your weekend, and I will talk to you next week. Good night.